Ring the bell, sucker. Ring the bell, sucker. This is Movie Fighters, the show where Chris Sims and I, Matt Wilson, we watch movies and we beat them up. We're doing something that we hoped to do sometime in March, but is instead happening sometime in April.
It's almost timely.
I think the movie is still in theaters now, but with the release of the new Power Rangers movie, the very serious, dark Power Rangers movie that includes revenge porn, as I understand it.
Yeah.
We are watching 1995's Mighty Morphin Power Rangers the movie to see how that holds up.
Now, Matt, have you seen this movie before?
I have not. I remember the copious advertising for it. In my memory, I just remember that the Power Rangers, who normally faced off against Rita Repulsa and Lord Zedd, were instead being faced with a purple guy who turned into, like, bubblegum. I always wanted to call him, like, Goopy Gary.
It's Ivan Ooze, but you're so close. This is going to be the third or fourth time I've seen this movie. I saw it when it came out in theaters back in 95. I know I watched it when I did the big Power Rangers rewatch that I did a couple years ago. Am I hearing some pre-snacking over there? Is that what's going on?
I'm tearing into my snack, but please continue.
Oh, it's so disrespectful. I'm pretty sure that I saw it at least once in between those. I've only actually seen Turbo, a Power Rangers movie, the second Power Rangers movie, once. But the average in my apartment of views this movie has had is very high, because it turns out that when Aiden was a kid, she rented this movie from a video store so much that she was banned from renting it again because she wore out the tape.
Similarly, my wife Marlene, this was one of those first movies that she begged her mother to take her to see at the movie theater. She insisted that her mom take her to see Mighty Morphin Power Rangers the movie. Now, Chris, in your recollection of every Power Rangers film, because I believe you have seen them all.
Well, there are three of them, so yes.
How do you think this one holds up in comparison?
I reviewed Power Rangers 2017 as one of the last articles I wrote for Comics Alliance before we all got laid off. So if you're curious and you don't mind giving them some clicks, then you can go and check that out. But one of the things that I said about that movie is that it is third out of three. It's in last place among the three. And my recollection is Mighty Morphin Power Rangers the movie isn't as good as you remember, and Turbo's not as bad as you remember. Because Turbo is frequently, I believe, considered to be a low point, maybe of the franchise. But Turbo also has Diva Tox, who is amazing. And again, I watched this movie maybe 4 or 5 years ago. I think it's interesting that rather than go with the usual formula, and just having Lord Zedd and Rita Repulsa just do a bigger thing, that they told a self-contained story. Ivan Ooze is a villain who shows up for the movie, and he is defeated at the end of the movie, and things kind of go back to the way they are. Which is weird, because this movie, Matt, I don't know if you know this, this movie's actually not in Power Rangers continuity.
It's an alternate timeline Power Rangers.
It's an alternate timeline Power Rangers that has the same cast as the regular timeline, but they do a version of this story on the show. So there's a version of this story that doesn't have Ivan Ooze, but does have, like, all the Ninja Ranger stuff, whereas Turbo is completely in continuity. And that's really interesting to me, especially because, you know, Power Rangers 2017 is a hard reboot. So there's three different approaches to superhero movie making, all on display in the Power Rangers franchise over a weird span of 22 years.
And as you said, this movie features the entire original cast of the TV show. Turbo, I believe, had the casts of two TV shows in it?
Turbo has most of the same characters, I believe, except the Blue Ranger is different because that is the series where the Blue Ranger is like a 12-year-old who, when he morphs, turns into like a full-grown adult ranger, which is, he's very precocious.
It sounds like it. But what this movie does have that, and Turbo, I believe, has that the new Power Rangers don't have, is a Bulk and Skull, which seems like a startling omission.
It's very upsetting, because there is a character who's like a bully, but he's like a much more like violent bully. And I think it goes back to the way the, you know, if you watch those first few episodes, they haven't quite figured out Bulk and Skull yet. Like, Bulk and Skull were originally part of a gang of five teenagers, and then it was whittled down to just them. But they're much more aggressive and much less comedic, which is weird, because look at them. Like, they're a classic comedy duo.
They really are.
But they are the heart of the franchise, and this is the only movie that gets that.
Quickly, I just came back from the grocery store getting my snack situation snack, and mm-hmm. I was walking through the grocery store humming the Bulk and Skull theme to myself the entire time. And I just wanted to demonstrate how I was doing that for real quick.
Mm-hmm.
So here we go. Okay.
So you were kind of beatboxing it a little bit.
I was beatboxing it a little bit.
I should just throw this out there. If you and I were to ever do a couple's costume, Matt, it would obviously be Bulk and Skull.
Undoubtedly.
Yeah. Aiden and I have talked about it with her being Bulk and me being Skull as a nice little role reversal. But it's you gotta get that one purple tie-dye t-shirt that looks like it's got donuts on it.
Unlike the television series, the film, Power Rangers the movie, does not include footage from the Super Sentai television programs. So the people whose faces that you actually see in those scenes taken from the tokusatsu Japanese television shows had to be recast. So Rita Repulsa is not played by the original Rita Repulsa actress. She's played by Julia Cortez.
That is interesting, because by the time of the movie, Rita Repulsa's actress was an American actress, okay, who I believe is different than she is in the movie. It's a different Rita. Now, is the voice the same? Because there was a different actress who did the voice, who was the voice actress for Rita from the start.
I think it is the same voice actress. Her name is Barbara Goodson.
Yes, she is delightful. She is fantastic.
And I assume it's the same voice actors for Goldar and Lord Zedd. As well, and Zordon, and so forth.
I just want to talk a little bit about 2017 Power Rangers, because I went to see that movie in theaters, and Matt, I hate seeing movies in theaters. I don't know if you run into that experience.
I super hate it.
Yeah, I haven't seen Lego Batman, and I haven't seen John Wick, and I was really feeling down about that, but I had to go see Power Rangers for work, and so Aiden and I went, and I was like, oh, right, seeing movies in theaters is trash. It is a trash activity. I hate it. There were some dudes in front of us, and I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure when the Wonder Woman trailer came up, they were like, one of them leaned over to the other and said something about SJWs, and I'm like, I could be at home. I could be at home watching anything right now.
When I went to see Logan, there were some people mm-hmm. a couple rows behind me that did that thing where they just kept explaining what was happening, like very obvious things to each other, and that makes me so furious. Like a dude leaned over and he was like, "That's Professor X." Like,
yeah, that guy's been Professor X with the exception of two films for 17 years. I should say, Julia Cortez is the actress in the movie, but it's actually Carla Perez is the actress on TV from 1994 to 1998. So,
couple little quick notes to wrap up. The film only had a budget of $15 million, which is very low for, like, a franchise superhero movie.
Yeah, like, even in 95. Like, 95 would have been, like, Batman Forever times.
Yeah, it only had a $15 million budget, and it only made about $66 million, which would also now probably be considered a failure, but was thought of as a success at the time.
Yeah, well, if that's $40 million in profit, yeah, then that's not nothing to sneeze at.
It's successful compared to the budget, for sure. And critics didn't like it very much, which, you know, you might suspect with a Power Rangers movie.
In Japan, there is a theatrical Super Sentai movie at least twice a year. And I have honestly never understood the desire of an American studio to not just do with the movies what they do with the shows. I mean, it would be weird, but the show is a weird show. So I've never really understood why they don't do those movies at least as like TV movies. And I wonder if they're not included in whatever deal Saban has with Toei. Because I would assume that since you can get, like, original Power Rangers movies, which, you know, this movie's all original. I believe Turbo was all original. And obviously Power Rangers 17 is all completely new. I wonder if that's part of the case. And I also wonder how these movies go over in Japan. Because I bet they are, like, almost universally reviled.
It's quite possible. I would suspect that there's a thought somewhere at some executive level that audiences would reject movies that use, like, obvious footage from, you know, Japanese films intercut with, like, American actors. But I don't know. Just to note, the director of this movie is Brian Spicer. It was his feature film debut.
Mm.
He went on to direct McHale's Navy and For Richer or Poorer.
You're talking about McHale's Navy starring Kelsey Grammer and Bruce Campbell?
And Rob Schneider.
Yeah, I just pulled the cast of the McHale's Navy movie off the dome, everybody. What's up?
Well, what was that Down Periscope?
That might actually be Down Periscope. It was Sergeant Bilko with Steve Martin. Who was in McHale's Navy? Tom Arnold?
I don't remember. But
I gotta look it up now.
He has gone on to direct a number of television shows, including Castle, 24, House, Heroes, Prison Break, CSI, The X-Files, Fringe, and numerous others. So he went on to be a very successful TV director.
Matt, quick update. I was half right. McHale's Navy has Tom Arnold and Bruce Campbell, as well as French Stewart, Tim Curry, David Alan Greer, and, of course, Deborah Messing.
Down Periscope is the film that features one Mr. Kelsey Grammer.
I think you can probably forgive me for getting those messed up.
Yeah, they're the volcano and whatever the other volcano movie was of bumbling Navy movies. Okay, we're going to watch Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, the movie. But before we do, Chris, it's time for the hottest segment in podcasting that has now been broken off into its own podcast. But before we break it off into its own podcast, we're going to include it here on Movie Fighters Snack Situation. You'll have to fight with something to eat. Sometimes it's savory, sometimes it's sweet. Snack situation. What you snacking on? Chris, what are you snacking on for Mighty Morphin Power Rangers the movie?
Nothing. What are you snacking on, Matt?
We should clarify. You have something on the way.
Yes. We usually do Movie Fighters on the weekends, but because it's been so long and because I got nothing else to do, we're doing it on a weeknight. It is 7:36 p.m. right now, which means we are back from working out and everything. And dinner is being thoughtfully made in the kitchen right now as I am in the office recording. So I will give you an update on my meal situation later on in the show when we come back. Matt, what was so goddamn good that you couldn't wait 10 fucking minutes before digging in?
I haven't actually eaten any of them yet. I was just opening the bag. So I tried to really think about not only what would sort of represent Power Rangers to me, but also what I would think, like, a favorite snack of Bulk and Skulls would be. Like, do they have, like, an established favorite snack on the show, Chris? Because I don't remember.
Their favorite, depending on how loosely you want to define snack, and I think that's something we're going to have to do on the Snack Situation side podcast now. Bulk is a big fan of a giant sandwich called the Bulk Witch.
Okay.
Which is really just like a party sub. Other than that, most foodstuffs that they encounter are not eaten. They are more like applied.
Yeah, they're
to
like
them
smushed
violently.
Smushed into their faces.
Yes.
Well, I thought if I like saw Bulk and or Skull walking down the hallway snacking on something, I thought they'd be reaching into a big bag of Swedish fish. So I have a bag of Swedish fish here in front of me. I think of Swedish fish as an all-American snack, even though they are called Swedish.
They're called Swedish. It's in the name.
Which is kind of like, I think about Power Rangers as an all-American show, even though it's half Japanese. So that is my thinking behind having some Swedish fish here to snack on. We are just about to watch Mighty Morphin Power Rangers the movie. I do not know that it's free to stream anywhere, but you can certainly rent it on Amazon, and it is available on all those other movie rental places if you want to check it out that way. We're going to take a pause right here. You're going to hear an ad and a little musical interlude. We will watch the movie, and we will be back to talk about it very shortly.
Hey, Matt, just real quick. I'm surprised that when you wanted something that kind of represented the Power Rangers, you didn't go for, like, a multicolored snack where they each have their own personality, like M&M's. Because much as I was a big fan of the Green Ranger, I know you're a big fan of the Green M&M.
They make Swedish fish that comes in different colors.
You love the Green M&M.
Untrue. Untrue.
We'll be back, everybody.
And we are back from watching 1995's Power Rangers the movie. And Chris, before we get into the movie itself, I want to talk a little bit about your meal situation, which was very, very intriguing. I'm slightly jealous, I must say.
Yeah, it was pretty choice. We have gotten a bunch of wedding presents off our wedding registry, which is awesome. And one of the things that we got was a waffle iron. So we had some waffles this weekend, and then tonight for dinner, Aiden whipped up some chicken and waffles for the kid. The kid is me. Spicy chicken. There was a sriracha and maple syrup situation happening. The waffle was delicious and fluffy. The chicken was crisp. Matt, I'm sorry that you had to deal with all my mouth sounds, but you can confirm that was some crispity chicken.
It was some crispity chicken, and I'm glad to hear that there was a syrup situation. The hottest new segment in podcasting, syrup situation.
There was a syrup and sriracha situation. The hottest and garlickiest new segment in podcasting.
Well, I'm glad to hear that your meal situation was a good one.
Yeah.
I enjoyed some Swedish fish, I'll tell you what.
Yeah, I think I got the better end of that deal, my dude.
I mean, you're probably right. All right, let's talk about Mighty Morphin Power Rangers the movie. It is both better and worse than I expected in weird ways. And let me tell you, that budget of $15 million, even though it may not have shown in 1995, boy, does it shine through in the year of our Lord 2017. There are some iffy effects in this movie.
Here's the problem, Matt, and I don't usually say this, but I feel like part of the problem of Power Rangers, the movie, is that it's too ambitious. Its reach exceeds its grasp. It flies too close to the sun. Because this is a movie that tries to do things with the Power Rangers that you'd never seen before. Which I think is honestly admirable. Like, that is what I want to see from a big screen version of Power Rangers. I want to see the Zords doing stuff that we don't usually see. I want to see the Power Rangers going to places we don't usually see. And we get all that in this movie. It's just not very good when it happens, especially the Zords.
Well, in practice, it's very unsatisfying because you don't get Zords until you've been sitting here watching this movie for 75 minutes.
Well, yeah, it follows the structure, and I don't know, should we talk about this now? Because you and I had a big conversation about the structure of this movie while we were watching it, in that you see it not as, like, an epic feature-length Power Rangers story. You see it as a single 21-minute episode stretched out to 95 minutes.
It's what it is. And it does not behoove the Power Rangers story structure to lengthen it. And we'll get into that later once we talk about high points, low points, and final thoughts. But yes, that is my thinking.
I don't know if I necessarily agree with you, but we will cross that bridge when we come to it. So here's the problem. Here's the problem with this movie, right up front. It's 1995, and they only have $15 million, which is an unimaginable amount of money, but in terms of movie making, it leaves a lot on the table. What you end up with is a movie that doesn't look as convincing as its television counterpart, because dudes wearing suits on a set of miniature Tokyo looks better than cheap-ass 1995 CGI.
In a dark-ass Sydney, Australia.
We did not know this movie was filmed in Sydney until we were, like, I went and looked it up, and one of the first things I said is, this looks a lot like BMX Bandits.
Well, let's talk about how the movie starts, because I feel like they blow a lot of their budget in the first, like, 5 minutes of the movie on something that has nothing to do with the movie, really.
So, talking about that? Oh, that's where the money went?
That, and on a huge stunt sequence, because the first thing we see is the Power Rangers, and I was under the mistaken impression that this was the original Power Rangers, but actually the original Red, Black, and Yellow Rangers have been replaced at this point, because those original actors left.
Yes. Austin St. John, Thoy Trang, and Walter Jones left the show due to a contract dispute. And there's actually, like, right where I was in Ranger Station before Comics Alliance was shuttered is right about at the time where if you go and look up, like, the Power Rangers wiki articles on them, they'll be like, oh, yeah, this is the last episode where Jason does new lines as the Red Ranger. This is the last episode where Walter Jones is actually doing – they're not just recycling old lines because they are getting ready to leave. Because at that point, the show was a huge success, and they were, you know, they had signed contracts for this untested, unknown, weird Frankenstein of a TV show that ended up being the most popular thing in America for 3 or 4 years.
And so they have been replaced by new actors playing new characters. Rocky DeSantos, who's the new Red Ranger. Is Johnny Young Bosch Adam Park?
He is Adam Park, yes.
And there is Aisha Campbell.
Yes.
And I don't know which actors line up with which characters necessarily. But anyway, they're all on a plane with Bulk and Skull. And they're about to do skydiving for charity.
To support an observatory.
Yeah. There's actually a Chekhov's gun at the start of this movie. Because they're doing this charity fundraiser for the observatory because there's a comet that's going to pass over in 2 days.
Matt, I've got 4 points I'd like to run through pretty quick, if I can.
Okay.
About the new Rangers. Aisha, very value neutral, I think. She's fine. She's perfectly fine. Adam, Johnny Young Bosch, one of the all-time best Power Rangers, who, incidentally, I found out while we were watching, did all of his own stunts and fight choreography work in this movie because his stuntman was injured and they just offered him the job. So he's in the suit doing the stunts, which is amazing. Rocky, terrible. Rocky is one of the worst. How many times did I say fuck off, Rocky, while we were watching this movie? Matt, no disrespect to Steve Cardenas. I'm sure he's nice, but Rocky is terrible. Point two, how do you make money for charity skydiving? Because they skydive and they land at a big party where they are promised free food. So there's like a big free festival going on. Just give that festival money to the observatory. Next point.
I think one of the selling points of the festival was going to be the skydiving. It was like an attraction to sell tickets. But go on.
Okay. Next point. I kind of, forgetting where this movie goes, because it's been a few years since I've seen it, I kind of assumed that the comet would be what's bringing Ivan Ooze to Earth, because all the bad guys are from space. But that is not at all what happens. Instead, the comet is just mentioned in the beginning, pretty heavily established in the beginning, and then the movie goes on so long that you forget about it until it is time for an explosion. That's it. That's all my points here at the start.
Okay. So they get 5 minutes of movie out of the skydiving portion. All the Rangers do their skydiving. One of them, I guess it's Tommy, has a snowboard / surfboard skyboard, I don't know, that he's doing tricks on. And then they all land where they're supposed to land. Bulk and Skull get left behind on the plane because they're scared to skydive. And end up jumping late and miss the scheduled place where they're supposed to land. So not only did they spend some pretty serious money on this stunt sequence, there's also three licensed songs in a row right here at the beginning of the movie. Because we have the Red Hot Chili Peppers song that you were humming just a second ago, Chris.
Yeah, the cover of Higher Ground.
Yes, and then there's a licensed song immediately after that, too. They're all in rapid succession right here up front at the beginning of the movie. That's a lot of spending in our first 6 minutes of the movie. Then we kind of settle into what the movie really is. Because Bulk and Skull, when on their skydive, they land in this quarry that's a big set that is used throughout the movie.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a quarry. It's a little bit of a construction site. I think I called it a quarry a couple times because the Power Rangers famously have a lot of fights in quarries on the TV show. But this is, they're meant to be laying the foundation for a skyscraper. So it's a big, deep foundation that they're dealing with.
But in practice, when we see people working there, they're just fucking breaking rocks. As Bulk and Skull are landing there, they have to come up with some excuse for why they're there, and they say they're building inspectors. And while that's happening, we see that this giant egg has been discovered. Just in the middle of the city, on this construction site. And
you
nobody
say
knows
a giant egg, but there's also a big metal claw holding it.
Yeah. It's weird. It's a weird looking thing. But nobody really investigates it. It's just there. That night, Lord Zedd, Rita Repulsa, Goldar, and Mordant, who is a pig that I have never seen on the regular show. Chris, is he ever on the regular show?
No, he's not, and I fucking hate him, Matt. I hate him. He actually had a backstory that was cut from the movie because test audiences found it too confusing. He's supposed to be Goldar's distant cousin who is visiting for the summer. So he's visiting, he's Goldar's little cousin who's staying with Goldar's mom and dad, Rita and Lord Zedd, for the summer. That's a simple enough concept that the mind boggles at how it was presented in this movie, where people were yeah, that's really confusing. As well as asking, why it's not just Squat or Babu or Finster or any of the usual characters. If you're gonna have Goldar, why not have the others?
Also, how is Goldar cousins with this pig creature with a monocle?
that's fucking Power Rangers, dude. like that's not the thing I have a problem with. But the weird thing is, he's a weird pig monster with a monocle, so it's like they took Squat and Babu, you know, Babu being the weird vampire bat guy who wears a monocle, and Squat being not a pig, but like a little round fat guy, and just smushed them together and came up with this truly execrable character.
So they all show up at this construction site at night, and it's the first time Rita and Lord Zedd, to my knowledge, have ever left just like the one set where they reside all the time. They find this egg and they open it, releasing Gooey Gary, who has been trapped in this egg for 6,000 years. No, I don't know exactly what his association with Zedd and Rita is, but he is the former ruler of Earth. 6,000 years ago, he ruled Earth until Zordon showed up and stopped him.
Oh, man, I'm sorry. I know you've got a funny bit where you call him Gooey Gary, but we really... Like, there might be people out there who haven't seen this movie, and so we should really say that, like, just so everybody knows where we are, that his name is actually Oscar Isaac as Apocalypse in X-Men Apocalypse.
He does look like that. I never even thought about Apocalypse from X-Men Apocalypse looking like that, because I got about 25 minutes into X-Men Apocalypse and turned it off. But, boy oh boy, you are not wrong. Also, I made the comment when Gooey Gary showed up in the movie that if they ever had made like a Nightmare on Elm Street cartoon for little kids, Gooey Gary is like the neutered cartoon version of Freddy Krueger.
I can't believe you just keep calling him Gooey Gary. Please go on, Matt. Please continue.
That's what I'm calling him.
That's
what he is.
Yeah. This is a guy who was a bad guy who was in charge of Earth, who conquered Earth 6,000 years ago and was stopped by what we can assume were a previous group of Power Rangers, although it's not made clear. When Zordon is telling the Rangers all about it, he's like, oh yeah, this is Ivan Ooze, this is Gooey Gary. And he was defeated by six teenagers just like yourselves. But he doesn't take it the step further of going, oh yeah, there were Power Rangers 6,000 years ago. Which is actually something I really did appreciate about the new movie, in that it created like the Power Rangers as a legacy team, which I thought was fun, especially given their real-life origins as a weird kind of legacy team.
Now, I don't remember what order this stuff ends up happening in, but there is a fight between the Power Rangers, Gooey Gary, and Gooey Gary's like little minions who were like putties but with dreadlocks at the construction site. And during that battle scene, I was amazed by two things. One, how violent the deaths of the Gooey Gary version of putties were, because they like explode into goo. Into like purple goo, which reads as blood, especially in the dark milieu of these fight scenes. Like every fight scene in this movie is so dark, which is such a weird contrast compared to the Power Rangers TV show, where everything is in bright, bright daylight.
Mm-hmm.
Second, this all happens to a song that's like, action boy, action girl, are you ready? And I'm sitting here cracking jokes about how that sounds like a really, really shitty Devo song. Like it's somebody doing
We literally went and looked at the, because I was trying to figure out if Ron Wasserman was brought on to do the music for the movie, because he had done all the like fight songs for the show. And you were like, yeah, wouldn't it be crazy if it was like Mark Mothersbaugh?
Yeah, Devo did that. That's a Devo song.
That's a shoot Devo.
Like Devo around 1995. Boy, they were cashing checks. Because that song's real, real bad.
That Whip It Money, like the 80s revival hadn't happened yet, Matt.
Mark Mothersbaugh was making music for Rugrats and not very good songs for Power Rangers movies.
Well, you know, this is maybe an apocryphal story, but the legendarily, a young Wes Anderson was in the theater for Power Rangers the movie.
And he thought, yes, this is what I need for my Royal Tenenbaums.
Yeah, that's why Royal Tenenbaum is essentially Ivan Ooze. Same character. He tried to cast if I knew the actor's name, Matt, that joke would have landed, but it did not.
Gene Hackman.
No, I was going to say he tried to cast Ivan Ooze, but had to settle for Gene Hackman.
Ivan Ooze is played by an actor.
I know who played Royal Tenenbaum.
Okay. Ivan Ooze, or Gary...
Believe it or not, listeners, I do sometimes watch non-trash movies as well.
Gooey Gary is played by an actor named Paul Freeman, who is an English actor, who cannot figure out his accent in this movie.
About half the time, he's doing W.C. Fields, but kind of like the Looney Tunes version of W.C. Fields. So what he's really doing, if you were in the audience for this movie in 1995, is he's doing that drunken magician mouse that's in those weird 70s Warner Brothers cartoons. Atascadero Escondido, like that guy. You know what I'm talking about, Matt?
I do. You know what he's also doing, though? He's kind of doing Freddy Krueger a little bit.
A little. He does say, "Welcome to my nightmare" at one point, right? Yeah. Or is it "Let the nightmare begin"? Something like that?
It's "Welcome to my nightmare." So he's kind of also doing Alice Cooper. But there's... Have you ever played the game Altered Beast?
Yeah, Matt. I have played Altered Beast.
The voice that's like, "Welcome to your doom." That's the voice he's doing. Through the whole movie. Wise from your grave. Okay.
Wise from your grave.
Gooey Gary, after his minions are defeated, he ends up going to Zordon, like the 50s diner that Zordon and Alpha 5 hang out in.
I actually really like the command center in this movie, but it is very much done with that mid-90s retro 50s aesthetic. Like the weird kind of, like, which is such a weird aesthetic because it's in fucking everything. It's like, it's kind of like in Saved by the Bell, and it's also kind of in Pulp Fiction. But it's got like the weird, like, neon columns. So it's this weird 80s, like 90s retro version of 80s retro version of 50s retro. It's super weird.
Well, you remember those gumball machines that had the plastic tubes that go down, and when you got the gumball would roll down a spiral and finally come out at the bottom, and it kind of lit up neon? That's mm-hmm. what the command center is decorated with.
Yes.
Those tubes from the gumball machines.
And it's not like a bad look, is the thing. Especially when you compare it to the TV command center that was just like a computer console and this weird backdrop that had Christmas lights behind it. Which is charming, but not exactly like, not a lot of sense of place in the command center.
So Gooey Gary shows up at the command center and he's just like, "Hey Zordon, remember when you put me in an egg and deposed me and fucked everything up for me? All right, I'm going to kill you now." So he starts zapping with his purple lightning everything in the command center. He destroys those tubes, and he's cracking a bunch of jokes about stuff he missed throughout history, like the Spanish Inquisition and the bubonic plague and the Brady Bunch reunion, which got us wondering how he knows about this stuff. Did he have a radio in the egg?
I mean, it's fine. It's a very, like that's not where I'm going to start nitpicking at this world. But it is like, yeah, how does... Ivan Ooze makes a lot of pop culture references for a dude who's been supposed to be an egg buried under California for 6,000 years. Which is all of recorded history.
So, he basically kills Zordon. He destroys the time warp that Zordon lives in. And this... To my knowledge, this is the only time where we ever see, like, what Zordon's deal is. He lives in a weird crystal time warp, which makes his, like, face float in the air like it does, and makes him kind of wavy, and he's just in there, in a tube, in, like, a nest, and he sort of maybe doesn't have legs.
he's very Superman 78. And yeah. This is not, like, the weirdest thing is, this is not how Zordon works in the show. But the way that Zordon works in the show is very vague. Like, by design, I'm sure, because who cares about, like, it's one of those things that a teenager would care more about than a kid, you know? It's like the old Grant Morrison thing about who pumps the Batmobile's tires. Nobody. It's fake. It's imaginary. But the, like, Zordon's tube actually will end up playing a big role in the show, and it's not a time warp. It's a weird dimensional thing. But in the movie, it is specifically referred to as a time warp, which makes no sense. Because when Zordon is, like, Ivanhoe breaks it, and we see Zordon laying in his crystal bed, which is very Superman 78. It's very, like, he is clearly, the depiction of him here is clearly inspired by Jor-El and Krypton in that movie. But we don't see him, like, rapidly aging or anything. Like, it's not like the time warp is keeping him from aging and dying, which is weird, because that's going to be brought up later in the movie. It's just that he's, like, laying there, and he's like, well, I'm going to die now for no reason. It's like, it's more of an iron lung than a time warp, I think.
It's keeping him from dying, but it's not keeping him from aging. I don't totally understand what it's about, but honestly, who cares? So the Rangers show up at Alpha 5's behest. They find Zordon. They see that he is dying, and Alpha 5 says, look, there's one way to save Zordon. You have to go to this planet called Phaedos, and you have to obtain the Great Power. That's the only way to save Zordon. So I'm going to send you there now, and do what you can. So the Rangers get sent off to Phaedos, and the power shuts down in the command center, because Alpha 5 uses the last of the power to do that.
Yeah, it's this weird thing where the movie posits that Zordon is directly powering them, like directly empowering them with whatever force is keeping him alive. He's also channeling through to them, which is also not really how it works on the show. But again, how it works on the show is really confusing. So it's like how the G.I. Joe movie replaces the complicated, convoluted, and very coincidental network of characters from established G.I. Joe mythology with a different set of relationships that's equally convoluted and coincidental, to the point where it's like, well, why did you bother changing it if you were just going to make it as complicated as it was? It's that, but for the Morphin Grid.
There's a lot of similarity between this movie and the G.I. Joe movie. I didn't vocalize this while we were watching it, but I was thinking about it the whole time. Because here's the deal. Rita's Cobra Commander, right? Rita Repulsa is straight up the Cobra Commander of Power Rangers.
Yes.
Lord Zedd is the Serpentor of Power Rangers.
Yes.
Man, Gooey
you
got Gary.
It. You nailed it. You nailed it.
Gooey Gary is Cobra Law. Or whatever the
Gooey
leader
Gary
of Cobra
is fucking Globulus.
Yes, he's Globulus.
See, I was over the live action Power Rangers or the live action G.I. Joe movie, but yeah, like this is very much G.I. Joe the movie.
Yeah, it's so similar to the point where like it kind of recontextualizes everything in a way that you don't really need.
Yeah,
and makes it complicated. Like,
Except for instead of getting turned into a snake, Rita and Lord Zedd get trapped into a fucking snow globe.
Yeah. On Earth, there's a little bit of a power struggle going on at this point where Gooey Gary is just like, it's on the moon. Gooey Gary is just like, hey, Zedd and Rita, I don't work for you, you work for me, and I've had it with you. So he just traps them in a snow globe. That's his way of dealing with them. But he keeps Goldar. He likes Goldar, so he keeps Goldar around. And that fucking pig guy.
Fuck it. I hate him. I hate him.
But I defy you to deny that Gooey Gary is exactly Globulus.
No, it's... So that makes... That kind of makes Mordant Nemesis Enforcer.
Yep.
But Nemesis Enforcer is, like, way cooler than that fucking piece of shit.
Okay.
So that makes... Oh, okay, wait. So that makes Rocky, Aisha, and Adam into who? Chuckles, Big Lob, and Sergeant Slaughter?
Yeah.
Lieutenant Falcon? I guess Dulcia is probably Lieutenant Falcon. Or no, Dulcia is Sergeant Slaughter! Dulcia is Sergeant Slaughter!
So, after taking care of Rita and Zed, Gooey Gary makes his new batch of goons, and they're not the weird semi-putties with dreadlocks anymore. These are like bird creatures. They're very Wizard of Ozzy.
He calls them something. What does he call them? Because I was like, that's not what those are.
He calls them Tengu warriors.
Yeah, Tengu warriors. Which is, like, I guess close, but it's a weird bit of, like, appropriating Japanese mythology in a movie that is appropriating Japanese pop culture, but also divorcing itself from Japanese pop culture. It's super weird. It's super weird to call them Tengu warriors.
So the Tengu warriors attack the Power Rangers on Phaedos, which is this, like, rocky beach planet, basically. It's this, like... Just like a big rocky shore with these crashing waves, basically. And they're walking around on the planet. Kimberly is pouring her heart out to Tommy at this point. Kimberly, who I kind of feel is like the de facto lead character of this movie. She's the only one who gets to like express emotions, really.
She's the only one who has anything to do. Like, she's the one who, like, there's a part not far after the sequence where she and Tommy have a conversation, and she's like, yeah, sorry, I'm just a little distracted. I was just thinking about Zordon. You know, we've been through so much, and I don't want it to end like this. And Tommy goes, don't worry, we'll stop the people responsible. It's like Kimberly's trying to have an emotional moment, and Tommy's like, we will murder a bad guy.
Yeah, we're like, Kimberly should have just been like, dude, I mean, Zordon's still maybe gonna die. Like, that doesn't fix it, really. But it's weird, because Jason David Frank is top billed in the movie, but Amy Jo Johnson, I think a lot more is asked of her in the acting department. But anyway, after they have that little moment, the Tengu warriors attack, and we never mentioned this, the Rangers lose their morphing powers. Like, somewhere back in the construction site, like, after they defeated the Goo Warriors, they lost their ability to morph anymore. For reasons that I don't super get, it's something that I guess Gooey Gary did.
Yeah, it's because, it's because of Zordon dying. Like, Zordon is their direct conduit to the power.
They're trying to learn not only how to save Zordon, but how to, like, morph into the Power Rangers again. So they are totally at a loss fighting the Tengu Warriors because they can't morph anymore. And then this stops being a Power Rangers movie for about 20 minutes. And it becomes some weird ass heavy metal shit. Because
this was amazing because you had no idea this was coming and I did. And this was delightful to watch with you, Matt.
This lady named Dulcia, who is the master warrior of Phaedos, comes flipping down from off a cliffside, and she starts swinging around these batons that make this loud, piercing sound, and it makes the Tengu warriors fly away. And she's like fucking, like, heavy metal barbarian warrior lady in, like, a prehistoric bikini.
She is a beautiful young Australian soap opera actress in a, like, warrior woman bikini with like a headband and a collapsible staff. There's a part of you where you're like, okay, is this the new Zordon? Like, is Zordon just gonna be like a hot barbarian babe? And I really wish the movie would have gone in that direction, honestly.
Instead, what happens is she takes all the Rangers across the outback for a ways in this other planet and takes them to this, like, I guess you'd call it a temple, even though it's outside. It's at least like a ceremonial structure. And she imbues them with their animal spirits of the Ninjetti. And she tells each of the Rangers what their animal spirits are. So Aisha is a bear who is... she has, like, descriptive words for each one. I probably should have written them down. But the bear is, like...
But none of them matter. Like, yeah. she tells Rocky that he's powerful and smart, so he gets to be a gorilla. None of that is true about Rocky. Again, sorry, Steve Cardenas, but, like, Rocky is the worst. I'm sorry.
Billy is a wolf because he's clever and fast. Kimberly
is cunning and swift.
Okay. Kimberly is a crane for reasons I don't remember. Tommy is a falcon.
She tells everybody, you are the something... Adjective and adjective. But when she gets to Kimberly, she's like, agile Kimberly, light as a feather, you are the crane. And it's like, that's a weird way to put that.
Because I don't think of cranes as being light birds. They're big.
I mean, and it's also like a weird, like body thing. About like Kimberly, you're thin, and that's great.
Yeah. Tommy is a falcon because that's like the king of the air, and Adam is a frog. And what's great is that apparently it was, according to you, Chris, Johnny Young Bosch's idea to make Adam get upset that he is a frog.
Yeah, that's what he said at one of the Power Morphicon panels, at least. He said it was his idea to be like, why do I have to be a frog? And then she tells him that he's like a frog that you kissed turned into a handsome prince.
Yeah, and that's the only descriptor she gives of the frog. She doesn't give any other reason why he's a frog.
Like, which at is least, basically telling Adam, like, yeah, you suck, but one day you'll be pretty cool.
She could at least say that he's got, like, he's good at jumping like a frog. I don't know. Even though she has already imbued them with power and they get this, like, these, like, ninja outfits, basically, they're not done yet. So they also have to go to this other temple, a monolith, to get their actual Power Rangers uniforms again. And they fight these, like, rock creatures, and it's kind of boring, and I sort of wish it wasn't in the movie. They also go to a dinosaur graveyard and fight dinosaurs, or dinosaur bones, that have become animated, like in these, like, kind of not great animatronics, but it's so much better than the CG that comes later. I guarantee you that the screenwriter of this movie, Arne Olsen, thought that was some brilliantly symbolic shit about them defeating the decaying bones of the dinosaur personas that they used to have. Like, that is some, like, screenwriting class shit.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of dig it. Like, there's a bunch of stuff in this movie, and I think this is a prime example of it, that's a really cool idea. That, to be fair, like, presented to a kid, I think would be really good. And the biggest problem is that it never looks as good as it does on the show.
The ideas can't be executed the way I'm sure... Arne Olsen wanted in the screenplay on screen because of various reasons. Back on Earth, Gooey Gary is into some carny ass shit. He is putting pieces of himself, which he is calling, marketing is just ooze, into these little containers and just giving them away to kids. It escalates so fast. Because the first time we see him doing this, he's just handing out ooze, like, by an amusement park at the pier. Just handing out the stuff in, like, a highly trafficked area. The next time we see him, he's doing fucking TV ads about it.
Are you like, mad that he got airtime for his mind control putty?
I mean, look, I'm not saying that, like, he didn't have a strong business model, which is give away shit for free. But it's a fast escalation is the only point I'm making.
Okay, that's fair.
So basically, everybody in the town of Angel Grove ends up with these bottles or canisters of ooze in their houses. And we see the one example of how each parent apparently reacted to this. We see the kid who ends up being the hero of the whole movie, Fred? I think his name is Fred.
His name is Brent. It did take us until the last 2 minutes of the movie to know that.
According to the cast list, his name is Fred.
Is it his Fred? I could have sworn it was Brent. We talked about it being Brent.
His name is Fred Kelman, according to this cast list. Anyway, he brings the ooze home, and his dad finds it on the kitchen counter. And his dad just opens up the canister and immediately jams his hand inside of it, not knowing what it is.
Like you do if you find a pudding cup or a jar of jelly. Now, we should say, Fred showed up earlier in the movie, at the skydiving scene. He was like, well, those guys are so cool, my karate teacher Jason or something. But, he might not even say my karate teacher Jason, or I guess it would be Tommy. He just shows up and he's there, and he's, a kid who likes both the Power Rangers and these five random-ass teens. He's meant to be the viewpoint character, which is bullshit. Because we have the Power Rangers. Nobody gives a shit about this kid.
But he ends up being the hero of the movie. Anyway, the dad jams his hand into this can of ooze and is immediately brainwashed and walks out into the street and lemming-like walks with all the other adults back to the construction site where Gooey Gary is constructing his giant ant monster robots that he's going to use to take over the city. The Power Rangers have finally gotten their power back because they defeat the Guardians of the Monolith and shit. And there's this sequence where a movie logo comes up, a movie studio logo comes up on the screen, and they get their fucking transformations back. They get their morphing back. So they head back to Earth, and now it's time for the final showdown. They're back to Earth. These ant robot monsters have started attacking the city. They're destroying everything around them. And Gooey Gary has decided that he doesn't have any use for the parents anymore, so he's just going to go make them walk off a cliff.
Yeah, he tells them to go back to the construction site and throw yourselves to your doom. And there's again, this is something that's written in the wiki. It's really weird. Because Power Rangers was a show for babies on Fox, and so you couldn't say kill or die or have blood. And so there's a moment when Fred goes to where all the kids are partying, since their adults now have a night job working for Ivan Ooze, which is itself really weird. Also, Bulk and Skull are there, who are well into their 20s at this point. And he goes, "You all have to come with me, or our parents are going to die." Which is very intense.
Well, okay, so we haven't seen Bulk and Skull since the beginning of the movie. Since they skydove into the wrong place, right? And now they're just suddenly here with
these
kids.
We see them a little bit afterwards, because we see them... we see them in the skydiving scene, and then we see them a little bit afterwards. But yeah, they've been absent from the movie for about an hour at this point.
And then they suddenly just kind of show back up once Fred starts jumping into action. So, the parents are about to walk off the side of the cliff, and he turns to all the other kids and he goes, "Hey, all you other kids, hold your parents back and don't let them walk off the cliff. You," and he points to Bulk and Skull, "you come down here and you help me." Because he's going to get this, fire truck crane and have it come up so he can spray all the adults with a hose, which is some real weird fucking imagery to see.
It's some real weird imagery.
But he acts as though he knows Bulk and Skull really well, which makes me think that an entire subplot involving Bulk, Skull, and Fred has been cut out of the movie.
I would not have been surprised. Because it definitely seems like Bulk and Skull are there to do more than just kind of fulfill the role of having Bulk and Skull in the movie, which is necessary, I would say. They're the heart of the series. But yeah, like, it feels like there's a subplot there that was cut, and I really feel like that shows in the fact that this movie is 95 minutes long. I think they probably cut this movie to the bone in terms of making it as short as possible.
But there
I think there was a lot more in that original script.
There are things that are still in the movie that I would cut out in a heartbeat in favor of a comic relief Bulk and Skull subplot, but whatever. While Fred, Bulk, Skull, and all the other kids are dealing with their parents, the Power Rangers are fighting Gooey Gary's ant monsters with their new Zords, which are all in their animal shapes. And let me tell you, this part of the movie is a rough fucking go. We spent the entire sequence where this fight was happening just marveling at how terrible the CGI was.
I have talked about this before. Caleb Goldner, big Power Rangers fan, as you know, Matt, once told me that the genius of Power Rangers was when they figured out that they could just make the stuff on the show look exactly like cheap toys, so that the stuff that kids would get would look exactly like it does on the screen. The further you get away from Power Rangers wanting to look like toys, the worse it tends to be. And the worst part of this is that it doesn't look like toys, it looks like reboot. And not only that, but we have the version of this Zord that appears on the show and looks way better, because it's just a guy in a suit moving around, doing stuff, not looking like terrible mid-90s CGI.
Saying it looks like reboot is almost too generous. To me, it looks like the animation you see on the Christian channel on Saturday morning, where, like, a worm is teaching a bee who calls himself the king of the bees humility. Please go look up that video, by the way.
I was going to say that was very specific for something I thought you were making up.
There's an Everything is Terrible video from one of those shows about this bee that keeps saying, "I'm the king of the bees." That is my favorite thing. It's so amazing.
Wait, is it Ivan Ooze? Because it's a very Ivan Ooze-ish voice.
I might be the same actor. Tim Conway is in that shit.
Oh my god. Talking about Dorf?
I'm talking about Dorf.
Matt, do you think this movie would have been better if it had been dwarfed up a little bit?
Maybe. But everything you expect to happen in this sequence happens. So the Power Rangers fight the ant monsters. The ant monsters are kind of getting the better of them, but then they eventually figure it out, and they destroy one of them. The other one ends up being kind of too powerful for them, so they combine into a Megazord to fight it. It looks like they're going to win that fight, but then Ivan Ooze does the grossest thing in the world.
You said it.
I did say it. Gooey Gary does the grossest thing in the world, and like he and Goldar are standing on this statue, and he like makes himself into this big like purple goo phallus, and he like impregnates the ant monster with himself, and the ant monster takes on his face, and it's just horrifying.
It is really weird to me that you were this upset by this when he's essentially just Venom.
It's more about the visuals of it than what's actually happening, because it's in this terrible, cheap mid-90s CGI where everything looks so slimy and disgusting. Like, the visuals are so unappealing through this whole thing. That part where Gooey Gary fucks a robot with himself and then imbues it with his person is just revolting.
I am delighted hearing you talk about it. I don't know that I've ever been happier to be on this show.
So, the Power Rangers, at this point, decide they got to get out of Dodge. So they fly into space in the Megazord and lure Gooey Gary out there with them. I think that, by this point, they have decided, okay, we're going to send Gooey Gary into the comet, and the comet's going to hit him, and he's going to be destroyed, and that'll save Earth. And so that's what happens. There's like a momentary idea that they're both going to get hit by the comet, but then for really real, they pulled the nutshot lever of the Megazord.
There's a button on the Megazord that is behind... No, again, the Zords are from another planet, and there is a button behind glass that says, in case of emergency, and Aisha smashes the glass and hits the button, and the Megazord just gives Ivan Ooze just a knee right to the balls, which, hey, guess what? Ivan Ooze has balls. If you were wondering if Ivan Ooze reproduces sexually, congratulations, you can now rest easy, or never again, knowing that Ivan Ooze does in fact have external genitals.
You know how on the show there's that one sword slash that was the end of every fight?
Mm-hmm.
The nutshot is the movie's version of the sword slash.
Yeah. It's so weird to say this, but they literally just kick Ivan Ooze in the balls, and then a comet made of lava hits him and he dies.
That's what happens.
It's fucking mad. Because, by the way, the comet, you know about comets, right? Generally made of ice. This one is on fucking fire in space.
Yeah, it's a lava comet. You gotta generate a lot of heat to be on fire flying around in space. But oh, this yeah. comet
you,
is.
Well, I would say you have to generate more than heat to have flames in the vacuum of space, Matt, but... That is neither here nor there.
You have to be a sun, a star of some kind. Anyway.
Yes, there has to be a gaseous component.
The Mighty Morphin Power Rangers murder Gooey Gary. And that makes all the parents snap out of it.
As they are being blasted with a fire hose.
Yep. And it also more or less brings Zordon back. The Power Rangers go back to the command center. And they find Zordon, and Zordon's like, hey, I'm feeling better. And his time warp comes back, his little tube comes back into place, and Zordon...
They join hands, and all the footage of the destruction of the command center is reversed.
Yes, that does happen. Also, Zordon and Gooey Gary have a weird resemblance that makes it seem like they're maybe brothers. I don't know. There's a feeling that maybe they're actually brothers. That's my
if you would like to read Matt's Zordon, if you want to read Ivan Ooze origins or Gooey Gary origins, I guess, because it's that's original character, do not steal. Then please patreon.com/warrockedajax, and Matt will write you an epic about the origins of Gooey Gary and his brother Gordon, which is what you called Zordon at one point, and I got very upset with you.
Gordon and Alex 5. But it seems like they could be brothers. I realized maybe with 10 minutes left in the movie that Gooey Gary is definitely purple because that's the only color that isn't already a Power Ranger color.
I'm shocked that it took you that long to puzzle your way through that.
Yeah, I guess he could have been brown. None of them are brown.
Really want a brown ooze monster?
No, I really, really super don't.
Yeah, if you didn't like him just like pooping himself into the weird robot ant.
So everybody parties back in Angel Grove. We get to hear first of all, we get to hear Shampoo's Trouble. Then the movie closes out to Van Halen's Dreams, with fireworks spelling out thank you Power Rangers in the sky. Then the credits start up, and then we get an actual for real mid-credits scene with Goldar thinking that he's overtaken of Rita's empire now that Gooey Gary is dead, Now that Gooey Gary has been murdered by a comet, but no, Zed and Rita are back. They've broken out of that snow globe. And that's the end of the movie. Chris, what are the high points of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers the movie?
I genuinely do think that there are a lot of really cool ideas in play. Like I said at the beginning, the movie's goal is clearly do a thing we can't do on the show. We don't really see the Rangers go to space. We don't see them go to any exotic locations. Everything happens in either Angel Grove or the Dark Dimension, which is about the size of the room I'm in now. Nothing really takes them on exotic adventures into space, especially at this point in the series. They don't, like, deal with other threats aside from Rita's monsters. So this movie does give us that, and I like that it tried. I like that it did try. It doesn't do it well, but it does try to give a different experience than you get from the show.
Yeah, I will give the movie this much. It widens the scope of the show pretty substantially. Because Angel Grove feels like a city. Since it's being shot on location in Sydney, it feels more like a real place than the Angel Grove from the show. And there's clearly more of a budget for stuff like music and stunts and some costumes and a handful of other things. It feels like the other planet that they go to is another planet. It's got kind of an otherworldly feel to it in places, even though they're definitely just in the fucking outback sometimes. And the threat feels bigger. Like, things feel bigger in this movie. And I think that's the best thing you can say about it.
Yeah, whatever this movie's failures are, they are not a lack of ambition, and they're not a lack of understanding what makes Power Rangers work as a show. Like, the movie kind of gets it, because the movie does sort of follow the pattern, you know? Like, oh no, we think they're going to lose, the monsters are here, and then there's big monsters. And then Ivan Ooze kind of, you know, regardless of the imagery being extremely uncomfortable for you, Matt, Ivan Ooze sort of merging with a monster and becoming the threat himself makes a lot more sense than just the monster sort of growing at random, right?
It also makes it so that Ivan Ooze can be disposed of in a way that Rita Repulsa cannot.
Yeah, so Rita always fights by proxy. Zed always fights by proxy. But Ivan Ooze, like, gets in there with the Megazord and fights. And I think that's a cool thing to see here.
The other thing that I would say is a high point of the movie is that it retains a lot of the charming stuff about the show. Like, it doesn't still have, like, Japanese footage, right? But when the Rangers, when the Power Rangers move their arms around, it makes those sound effects, which are always hilarious and, like, kind of a knowing nod / wink to the audience that, like, we know this is funny. Like, we know we're not taking ourselves too seriously.
Yeah, apparently there was a time when they wanted to take, like, the visors off the masks or take the helmets off the Rangers or something so that you could see the actors' faces in those scenes. And after they'd shot them, they kind of realized that it didn't work and that the Rangers are supposed to look like action figures. You know, they're supposed to look not faceless or emotionless, but they're supposed to look like this, you know, different than people. And so they went and reshot those scenes and put the helmets back on them. And I think they kind of come up with a clever way to have their cake and eat it too, in that we get their kind of, you know, they're pretty cool ninja outfits when they use their ninjetti powers when they're on the other planet. That's a nice way of getting around it that, and again, that's something that Power Rangers 2017 does not do. Those helmets open up, like you know how in the Stallone Judge Dredd movie, that, like, the first fucking thing he does is take off that helmet? Yeah. And you're like, okay, well, this is bad. Like, the Rangers in the 2017 movie cannot wait to not look like the Power Rangers anymore. And I like that they stuck with it here.
Low points of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers the movie. Just get it out. Get it out now.
Well, I hate that fucking pig with his goddamn monocle. I hate him. Why does he exist? Again, I get it. They're trying to do something new, like get a new character in there, something we haven't seen before. But fuck that guy. I hate him. He's terrible, and I hate him.
By that same token, Gooey Gary is not a particularly threatening villain. He's gross. And what he does to that robot is disturbing and will live in my brain forever, haunt my dreams until I die. But compared to Lord Zedd, who has an exposed fucking brain, Gooey Gary looks like a harmless little doll. Like, there's nothing really, like, super threatening about him. Plus, I made this remark while we were watching the movie. It takes him half an hour of screen time, what is conceivably several days in movie time, to do what Rita Repulsa can do in a few minutes.
Ivan Ooze doesn't... Okay. Rita gets a lot of leeway to do anything because she's a weird old space witch. And she lives on the moon in a palace that has a neon sign on it. Like, she, like, can do weird stuff and get away with it because of the way her character works. What's weird is that she, that Ivan Ooze has a much more straightforward plan, right? Like, he's gonna take over people's minds with Ivan Ooze's Ivan Zeus, which is legitimately the name of the product he sells, and then enslave them and get them to make his world-conquering machines, and then dispose of people when he's done with them. It's a very straightforward plan, and yet it doesn't feel like it makes a lot of sense.
Well, the thing is, Rita doesn't have to enslave an entire town to make her monsters. She just makes them out of fucking clay.
Yeah.
And then they're alive.
She's got Finster on staff.
Yeah, they're alive, and then she can make them big at will.
Yeah, Ivan Ooze is weirdly not threatening. Maybe it's because there's a weird thing with Lord Zedd, where Lord Zedd is very obviously an American creation, right? Because you have Rita, who the Japanese equivalent, Bandora, is a really kind of scary character because she's trying to murder children constantly and works for Great Satan. But she's also very comedic and silly and goofy, and I think that comes over with Rita. With Lord Zedd, it's like, they were like, what do villains look like? Oh, they're horrifying skinless monsters with exposed brains who are held together with metal and hatred? Okay, cool. And they went way too far and had to backpedal on him because he was too fucking scary. With Ivan Ooze, I don't know what they're thinking. Like, because he doesn't feel scary enough to be the villain of the Power Rangers movie. But he's more powerful than Rita and Zedd, but he has to have people make his monsters, like, out of machines? Like, he has to have a factory build his monsters? He's very weird. He's very, like, weirdly grounded in a way that doesn't work.
In a way that doesn't feel like Power Rangers, and I think that's the biggest low point of the movie, is that there are huge stretches of this movie that do not feel like Power Rangers. Like, as neat as the idea of them going to this heavy metal planet is, and for them to meet this warrior lady, none of that feels like Power Rangers. That feels like it's out of some kind of whole different franchise. It feels like it's out of some kind of whole different movie. And
I think there's a way to do it that would have felt like Power Rangers, but it would have been like, they go to that planet and these robot, you know, their new Zords show up and they, like, you know, Kimberly rides around on top of a flying crane robot. Like, you know, if you want to get really heavy metal with it.
Yeah, like the character of the you know, the warrior woman just feels
Dulcia.
Like, Dulcia, she feels like she's out of a whole different thing, which is why I had my reaction to it where I was like, I was not expecting this.
There's a Power Rangers series. It was Gal Ranger in Japan, and it was Power Rangers Wild Force in America that kind of does this. Like, there's a floating island with, like where the Zords kind of roam freely because they're animals. They just happen to be robots because, fuck it, they're toys. Why not? And like, that feels like this idea given a much better form. And I think that's another weird thing about this movie. It's not necessarily a low point, but, like, they get a do-over on this. Maybe because it was not really considered a critical success, although, you know, like we talked about, it made money. But, like, when it comes time to do this for the show, they do this story, again, of them getting their new ninja zords. And they get the same animals. They get the ninja megazord looks vaguely in the same shape as the megazord we have here. It looks better because it's, you know, a suit and not terrible CGI. But there's no Dulcia, there's no Ivan Ooze, there's no journey to the Ninjetti. Like, they get to tell this story again, and they take the chance. Somebody went, yeah, we're doing this again, and we're going to make it more like Power Rangers. And I would actually be really curious to kind of sit down and watch those episodes. And maybe that's what, like, I'm springing this on you right now. You can cut this out if you want to. But maybe since we kind of missed an episode in March, maybe that's what we should do for another episode in April, is watch the TV version of this story. It's on Netflix.
Yeah, I'm down for it. I'm down to compare for sure, because the other thing that I feel like the movie doesn't do very well is pace things out. Like, there are fights throughout the movie, but they're all these kind of like, it's not that they're badly choreographed, but it's the fight that happens 10 minutes into every episode of Power Rangers, where the uncostumed, unmorphed Power Rangers fight a bunch of putties, right? We get like six of those fights in this movie, but only one big Megazord fight, which is probably all they had the budget for. But it's another reason why I say this movie is a 21-minute episode of Power Rangers expanded into 95 minutes, and not, like there should be a big climactic fight at the end of the first act, the second act, and the third act. And it doesn't do that. It saves everything for the end of the third act, and a kid by that point is going to be exhausted and not care that they went to this other planet and met this warrior lady. And for these explanations of, like, what animals they are, they don't give a shit about that. I didn't give a shit about that. Like, I would have cared more about Bulk and Skull and what they were up to than some of that stuff that they go through. And, like, scenes going back to Alpha 5 and Zordon just chatting. Like, you don't need that. Like, it's weird what they left in when clearly so much ended up getting cut out. But I'm going to tell you the biggest place where they biffed it in this movie, Chris. It's the Power Rangers costumes. They don't look remarkably different from the costumes on the TV show. They're just kind of leathery instead of fabric. But the first time they morph, that's what they're wearing. And when they get their costumes again, when they go to the planet and do all the rituals and stuff, they just get the same costumes back. They should have had, the first time they morphed, they should have had the costumes from the show, just the regular fabric costumes. Then, when they went to the planet, got their new powers, and sort of revised what is going on with the Power Rangers, that's when they should have had the movie costumes. That's when they should have gotten new outfits.
Yeah, I think you are exactly right. I think the problem with that is that America never quite got the hang of the Power Rangers costumes. Whenever they have to wear those costumes in American footage, they look terrible, and I don't know why. 'Cause it's like, surely you can find in-shape people to wear the Power Rangers costumes. And I'm sure, like, look, in all honesty, I'm sure that the suit actors in the American versions were perfectly in shape. They're just not very forgiving costumes. But maybe if they would have had costumes, like, designed and made for this movie rather than just using whatever was in the warehouse, then, yeah, I think that would have been a really cool moment, because it would have signified a change. It's really weird that they go through a costume change and then go back to what they had before. And that's, like, I think that's endemic of the weird pacing of this movie.
All right, Chris, what are our final thoughts about Mighty Morphin Power Rangers the movie?
We talked about watching Ninja Quest, which is the 4-part episode from Power Rangers Season 3, because I'm never going to get to it in Ranger Station. So I would be really curious to see how it stacks up to this. But also, I've watched a lot of tokusatsu movies. I've watched a lot of the ones from Japan that are either the Super Sentai movies or the Kamen Rider movies, and they're not as poorly paced as this. They're usually a little bit shorter because I think they show both of them together. So you have like maybe a slightly over an hour Sentai movie and a slightly over an hour Kamen Rider movie. But they are not paced like long episodes. They usually either introduce a different problem that has to be approached in a different way. And a lot of times those are the movies where they get to acknowledge the past. Like you see a lot of Rangers or Sentai from the past, or a lot of Kamen Riders from the past will show up in the movies and not necessarily show up in the show. But it's a place for them to acknowledge the history. And obviously that's not really a thing you could have done in Season 3 of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. But I wish I would be really curious to see what like the Z-Ranger movie or the Die-Ranger movie or the Kaku-Ranger movies were like, because I want to know why they didn't look at those and figure out how to pace it, because they clearly didn't.
I guarantee you that the screenwriter of this movie was thinking a lot about Joseph Conrad Hero's Journey shit and what they learned in a screenwriting class. Because there's a lot of screenwriting class in this screenplay, but you can't apply screenwriting class to the Power Rangers. They just need to fight a fucking monster at the end of every act. And if that just means that Rita Repulsa, Lord Zedd, and Gooey Gary all get together and bet each other which one can beat the Power Rangers, and so the Power Rangers has to fight one of their different monsters at the end of each act of the movie, then so fucking be it. Let that be the movie, instead of trying to do a hero's journey that the kids in the audience do not care about because they just want to see Megazords, and the adults in the audience do not care about because they just want this thing to be over. So the hero's journey thing is what makes this movie fail, even though, like we said, there are things about the ambition of this movie that you cannot fault.
This movie weirdly tries to be Star Wars. Because we didn't even talk about this. This movie opens with a crawl. With a crawl that like does the thing where it like capitalizes Zordon and Zords, but not Alpha 5 for some reason. And like really goes through some Star Wars stuff that does not work. Not like when Die Ranger was just wholesale ripping off Star Wars.
So what we're going to do is we're going to watch the 4-episode Power Rangers TV arc that tells this same story and compare and contrast on our next episode. And we're going to do it before the end of April because we didn't do an episode in March. That is our gift to you, everybody. We're also going to have a snack situation special coming up here maybe next week. I think I'm going to put this episode out this week and the snack situation special next week. Yep, we're finally eating those Chinese snacks. So keep an eye out for that, everybody. Thank you to all our Patreon backers who helped make that happen. We reached our goal, and we are super thankful for it. If you would like to contribute to whatever our next goal is going to be, or give us an idea for what our next goal could be, head over to patreon.com/warrocketajax and make that happen. Our music is by Michael Kill. Our website was designed by Sean Bogus. The snack situation theme is by Matt Fisher. We'll be back in probably less than a month to talk about more Power Rangers stuff. Until then, everybody, go, go, movie fighters.
This has been a Kleitas Media production.